Powered only by the wind and the sun, it's the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. The Medicare podcast that blushes with embarrassment. Offending lazy people everywhere, it's Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Hey, it is Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. Welcome. Welcome, everybody. It is April Fool's Day. Randy told me not to tell everybody what the date was because he said that's going to confuse our numbering system on our episodes. But I can't stop myself. April Fool's Day. What a terrific holiday. In fact, it has a long and honorable history dating back to England in the early 1700s, but I'll let Randy describe that to us. He has a way of making boring things interesting. Or is that me? Medicare? Yeah, maybe it's me that makes boring things interesting, like Medicare. That's not typically an interesting subject matter, but that's what we're here to discuss. We discuss Medicare, and our goal here is to help make the transition from Obamacare to Medicare less painful, less scary, and perhaps a little bit of fun. We want people to be able to maintain control of their own health insurance, and we always strive for a couple of laughs and, more often than that, some factual information that will make people feel at ease with that transition that they have to make. The book that I wrote to help that process along is Medicare for the Lazy Man, simplest and easiest guide ever. It's on sale at Amazon.com, and it's got a big red 2021 on the cover. Don't buy a Medicare for the Lazy Man book that doesn't have a red 2021 on the cover. You'll be misled at the very least, ripped off at the worst. And we also have the same book in audio ebook format, and we're praying every day that the audiobook will be approved. Last year, it took from January 27th to April 22nd. This year, I submitted the book. I swear it was on January 21st, but the other day, that date was changed to January 20th. I did not change it. And so January 20th, probably February, March, sometime in April, I hope that book will be approved and put on sale. They won't warn me. They won't say, hey, your book's going to be on sale. I have to check every day. And one day I'll check and the good news will be there that the book, the audio book, will be available for sale. And we'll tell you about it right away. It is going to be in, I think, the low 90s today. It's a beautiful sunny day in Arizona. The American flag across the street is flying high. It's really, really windy, but when it's warm and windy, that's not so much of a problem. Speaking of problems, how about my podcast engineer, Randy Carson, Mr. Problem Solver? How are you, Randy? How are things?
I'm good. You know, speaking of wind, you know, coming from, you know, BFE, Nebraska, let's just put it.
Okay, yeah, this is a family podcast.
Clear out in the middle of nowhere on the panhandle. When you hear wind like that, What immediately comes to mind is you're going to be snowed in for the next 6 weeks.
Did you have these weather anomalies that would occur where the temperature would be in the 60s one day and then the blizzard would come in the next day?
Yes. The 60s we used to call... what was that? Some sort of autumn.
Oh, Indian summer?
Indian summer, yes. We used to call it Indian summer. And then as soon as the Indian summer stopped, you were in for Eskimo winter.
Yeah. I think Indian summer was a warm period after the first hard freeze. That was probably the definition. And every year, the Chicago Tribune had a cover on their Sunday magazine of an old guy smoking a pipe telling little kids about Indian summer and the engines did this and that and everything when I was a youngin, and I'll bet you that got canceled by the cancel culture, along with half the other stuff. I heard today that my Chiefy Weepies, my Kansas City Chiefs, no audience members are going to be allowed to come in with face paint or headdresses on. Apparently, they're afraid of offending an Indian. And frankly, I would have thought that would be a compliment. I mean, when they call the Braves a team, the Braves, that's the, you know, Indian Braves, that was always kind of a compliment. You got to be scared of those guys because they're tough. But no, they can't. The audience is not going to be allowed to have any fun anymore. You have to sit there with your hands in your lap and do not do anything that might appropriate the culture of somebody else, I guess.
Well, you also know, I know you know this, Doug, but Omaha, by the way, Omaha, Nebraska, where I've spent a good deal of time, is named after the Omaha Indians.
Absolutely.
So what are we supposed to do? Change the name of Omaha to the city previously known as Omaha, or what should we say?
Well, that's how Prince managed to solve his identity problem. I went to an Omaha Indian casino once. My friends lived in Sioux City, and they said, let's go to, was it Nebraska? Yeah, wherever the Omaha Indians hung their hats. And we'll show you two different casinos, two different tribes. And I know one tribe was the Omaha tribe. This was up north of Omaha, though. And we went to one casino that was brand new. The tribe was barely able to afford a Quonset hut. And all of the tables were used from other casinos. And they had cigarette burns in them and stains, you know, where drinks had been spilled. And little nicks where if you rolled dice across the felt, the dice would bounce funny and everything. And this was a tribe who was just getting into the casino business, and they were going to try to pay for it as they went along. And then we went down the road a piece to a different tribe's casino, and they had been in business for about 5 years, and it was, by comparison, it was magnificent. They had saved their money, reinvested it, built a very nice building, and had all new looking equipment that was well taken care of. And so it just showed, I think, it put a face on the excellent habits of thrift. You know, start out, raise yourself up by your bootstraps, and I think they were doing it the right way. You hear about all these tribes with the giant casinos that where the tribe members don't really get any benefit from all the casino and hotel activity because there's a corporation that runs the whole thing and takes a hefty slice of the profits. And I don't think that's the proper way that these tribes should get into the business, but on the other hand, if you don't know anything and if you don't have anybody that can read and write, it might be that that's the only way you can get started.
I've been told, I don't know whether it's true, but I've been told that all, you know, when a particular tribe goes into the casino business, that each tribe member is supposed to get a share.
Yep. That's what I've always heard.
Of the profit now.
Right.
Obviously, that remains to be seen because I'm not a member of an Indian tribe, nor do I know any folks that are, but
right.
It sounds like a great idea. And if the casino's going well, I think it's a great idea.
How about those tribes that are so far removed from civilization that they can't get enough visitors to come and spend money and to gamble, like Eskimos? You know, there are a lot of Eskimo villages that are so far removed, they're never going to be able to have enough business in a casino, even if they were to start casinos.
That's right. That's right. I don't, you know, it's funny you say that because my brain was immediately going to Alaska. Uh-huh. Why, I don't know, as we were discussing the casinos that I'm aware of in Nebraska, anyway. The place that everybody makes their money in Alaska is oil.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. We're lucky to have that. Seward was not such a weirdo after all. Seward's Folly. Remember, that's what Alaska was named when we acquired it in, I want to say, 1867 is when we annexed Alaska from the Russians for a few million bucks, you know, big deal.
And
we got a bunch of oil.
Yeah. And I don't know, you probably know this because you're a well-versed, well-educated man, but I didn't know this. When I went to Alaska, I was visiting with somebody, and they said, yeah, if you've established residency in Alaska, I think you have to be there for 5 years, you get a cut of all the oil profits, and it averages between $7,000 and $11,000 per Alaskanite.
I can't tell you how much it is, but yes, instead of an income tax, they have a payout for all Alaska residents, and it does come in the form of a check once a year. I will say that my original statements about the Eskimo villages and everything were based on my viewing of many episodes of Alaska PD, where they have Alaska, you know, and they have to chase guys around in the snow and everything. But then I'm switching to a different show that we have kind of enjoyed called The Alaskan Bush People. And it's this family of people that are barely civilized that homesteaded in Alaska. And then they got bounced out of their first homestead, and they had a homestead somewhere else, and they wound up homesteading in Washington State, but they didn't change the name of the show. It's still Alaska and the Bush People. But they got in some kind of trouble because of that state payment. I think they managed to get themselves on the list of Alaskan residents before they were really eligible. And they were threatened with jail. And I think one of them went to jail in a plea arrangement so that the rest of the family didn't have to go to jail. So I don't remember all the details, but it was just, I like watching weird television shows, and that just happened to fit the bill.
Yeah. I did the same thing. I watch the weirdest shows, and I become aware of and learn the weirdest bits of facts, but I didn't know that part about the Alaskan Bush People. Yeah, now they're the Seattle Bush People, or
they're somewhere in Washington State, but they're up on a mountain. It's a 4,000 foot mountain, and the father of the clan, the patriarch, just died, and so we don't know what's going to happen with the show. I don't know that the rest of them have the depth of interest to carry the whole thing or not, but it's a strange bunch of people because one of them had a speech impediment, one of the older kids. And so they all have a speech impediment because that older kid taught the younger ones to talk with his speech impediment. So they all talk funny, and they also hate dentists. It's very apparent that their teeth are deteriorating rapidly. So
rapidly as we speak.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, I did want to say, if you like weird TV shows, our latest, newest acquisition, I told you this, but I haven't told the audience, is a show on the Weather Channel in America called Heavy Rescue 401. And 401 is the name of a highway that goes across Canada in Ontario. And, they have these giant tow trucks and rigs that go out and grab semis that have jackknifed and fallen off the road in ice storms and stuff like that, and get them back on the road. And the biggest problems they have sometimes are not moving the truck, but it's the contents of the truck, the trailer's cargo. And depending on what it is, it could be really, really messy. And so they have to be very creative about how they salvage the load and where they put it. You know, if it's oil and it spills out all over the road, then they have to close the road for a month while it dries up or whatever. So anyway, we should probably get after it. You know, I think we could spend all morning jawjacking like this, but it's probably best that we do a little Medicare talk.
Should we do some MLM mailbag?
Well, that's an excellent idea. I'm glad you mentioned it. The mailbag was getting a little full, and I've still got stuff dating back to last fall. So why don't I reach in there with my leather glove, and that's so that the life forms that live down at the bottom of the bag cannot trim my fingernails for me. And let me grab a handful of items here and see how far we get before the crickets interrupt us. So this came on November 11th. It is Red Letter Day in Western civilization, Armistice Day, I think, or was that September? September 11th is November 11th is Armistice Day, the end of World War One, when all of the countries decided to stop the fighting. And at 11 o'clock, at the 11th hour, the 11th day of the 11th month was how they described it. So don't know. I'm guessing the very last guy that was killed in World War I probably wished they had stopped an hour earlier, but I don't know who that guy was. So anyway, let me read this item from a person named Lee, and it's a male Lee. Dear Mr. Jones, I like it when they're calling me Mr. Jones. They're showing a little bit of respect. Usually that doesn't last very long. He says, I have read your book on Medicare and I have two questions. My situation should be fairly common. I'm 68 years old and work for a company which has thousands of employees in its medical plan. When I turned 65, I chose to remain in my company medical plan. I did sign up for Part A of Medicare, but I did not sign up for Part B. If I were to leave the company, my special enrollment period would open. And he says COBRA does not delay the running of the special enrollment period. And I would need to sign up for Part B as well as a Medicare supplement and a drug plan. Currently, my company insurance is my primary coverage and Part A is my secondary insurance on items covered by Part A. Since I do not have Part B, the company medical plan is my entire coverage for items of Part B, items that Part B would cover. In these uncertain times, you never know when employment may end suddenly. If I leave the company before signing up for Part B, there could be a gap in coverage. I can sign up for COBRA. Does COBRA cover this gap? That's one of his questions. Part A would become primary and COBRA would become secondary coverage for matters covered by Part A. Will COBRA serve as both primary and secondary coverage for items generally covered by Part B until my enrollment in Part B becomes effective? When applying for Part B, I will need to submit form CMS L-564 with my application. If for some reason my employer does not complete and return the form to me, is there other evidence that Medicare will accept to show that I have been enrolled in the company medical plan? Thank you for your response. And Lee in Houston, Texas. And I said, what did I say? I said, thanks for writing, sir. Your plan is sound, and if there is a delay in Part B enrollment, you will be fully protected by COBRA until Part B becomes effective. Generally speaking, everything in this world happens on the last day of the month or the first day of the next month. If your application for Medicare supplement and prescription drug plans arrives at the company underwriting department prior to the end of the month, the coverage will likely begin on the first of the following month. Enrollment in Part B will also require Form CMS-40B, which is the actual application plus the L-564, which is proof that you had credible coverage. Since the onset of the panic, many Social Security Administration offices are closed. So my understanding is that the Part B enrollment procedures have been relaxed and it can be done online. In the absence of an actual signature from your HR department, your completion of both parts of the L-564 may be sufficient. I have heard several conflicting versions. So my suggestion would be to contact the Social Security Administration via telephone and ask for their instructions. I've also heard that in the absence of a local place to conduct this transaction, one can fax copies to the headquarters in Baltimore. In summary, I believe that there are ways to accomplish your goal of preparation that will not expose you to a late enrollment penalties and periods of inadequate insurance protection. Please be sure to contact me again if I can be of further assistance. Then I wrote a note to myself. I should have also said, in addition to the form from the employer that shows that he was participating in the employer's medical plan, also check stubs showing the withholding from his pay goes a long way. I believe that those are considered to be important proof that he actually participated in the credible insurance coverage that avoids his late enrollment penalty. Since he is age 68, he'd be subject to a late enrollment penalty if he hadn't been actively at work for those 3 years since he turned 65. But he is golden. It's just going to require a little preparation. And it sounds to me like he's got a good handle on how to proceed with his Medicare enrollment and his Medicare supplement enrollment and his prescription drug enrollment. But I hope when that day comes that he'll call me and I'll help him with the paperwork. All right. So here's another item. This is a long one. This is from Timothy, and he lives in Arizona. He said, I turned 65 on 9/7/20, and I have not signed up for Medicare because Mayo, the Mayo Clinic in Arizona, does not take Part B. I am insured through a spouse, large firm. I would opt for a high deductible Plan G supplement based on your book. My Irma adjusted payments bring me to within $300 a month of my high deductible Blue Cross Blue Shield premiums, $4,000 a year deductible. By the way, I did not find the Irma info on your site. And that confused me when I read this last November, but I then realized that in the prior year's book, the 2020 edition of the book, I said that I would have the Irma tables on the website. The reason I did that was the government was very slow in getting their information out. And I didn't want to delay printing of the book, waiting for the government to get their poop together. So I told people in the book that the Irma tables would be on the website. And I think we never did it. So I might have lied. I apologize if so. So his question is, what is the expected cost of Mayo's treatment of Part B? Does the supplemental insurance help? And I said to him, and this is kind of a problem because Mayo Clinic, you know, it's kind of a thing where we think of it as a place where a lot of specialists practice medicine, and you don't like to think that the Mayo Clinic is not going to see Medicare patients because their reimbursement level is too low for them to make a decent profit. But that's pretty much what the case is in Arizona. So anyway, here's my answer. Thanks for writing, Timothy. My wife and I have had the same disappointment of being turned away by the Mayo Clinic in Arizona. That's me. I'm talking that. That's first person, singular and or plural. So I said they were happy to do some routine blood tests ordered by doctors outside of Arizona and even assigned me a Mayo patient ID number. However, when I needed something more substantial, I was turned down flat. My wife needed knee surgery and she was rejected also. We both have Medicare supplements, but I think the thing Mayo was trying to avoid was caused by Medicare, the low reimbursement rates allowed by the government. I think Mayo rejects Medicare participants because they cannot cover their costs and make a decent return based on what the government allows them to charge patients. Therefore, I don't think there's a satisfactory answer to your question. Arizona has no shortage of other doctors and hospitals that will accept Medicare assignment. By the way, you are the first to tell me that the Irma tables are not on the website. First request like that I have had since the book addresses that subject fairly thoroughly. Once again, thanks for writing. Let me know if I can ever help in the future. And he wrote back. He said, and let me find the beginning of his lengthy exchange. Okay. On November 19th, this is the next day, he said, thank you for the response. Perhaps Mayo in Arizona will evolve. I do have a couple of items. One, a question about insurability. I was happy to not go on Medicare this year at the cost of a few thousand dollars in order to contribute to continue to see my doctors at Mayo. Appointments have been put off, as you might imagine. I think he's talking about the coronavirus panic. And so he has not been able to maintain his normal schedule of appointments at the Mayo Clinic. He said, honestly, I'm also concerned about disastrous decisions out of DC. Well, I think we all are. He said, I was comfortable staying with my wife's employer's high deductible PPO via Blue Cross Blue Shield of Arizona. And the employer is used to spouses staying on, but a snippet in your book struck me. He said, you mentioned that I might have trouble finding supplemental coverage if I do not enroll this year, his first year of eligibility, and that insurers can consider me uninsurable. I do not currently think I have issues that make me uninsurable, but who knows what can happen in the future. Can you suggest a contact somewhere where I can find out more about this potential pitfall? On the other hand, if your recommended supplemental path doesn't work, I assume I can still sign up for an Advantage plan. Here's question two, a suggestion and a question. He said, I remain uncertain as to whether I can avoid a gap in my coverage if I decide to apply for Medicare this year. You and the Medicare website comment that a lapse in coverage might occur if one does not start the process early in the eligibility window. And that would be June 1st to December 31st for him. And that's based on his 65th birthday, I guess. You've got 3 months before your birthday, the month of your birthday, and 3 months after your birthday. So that would be the 7 months that he's talking about here. I reread the relevant parts of your book to see if I could get comfortable about avoiding a lapse in coverage. So if I decide to enroll by the end of the year, can I avoid having a lapse, giving up coverage through my spouse's company before the start date of Part B? And if I can avoid the lapse in coverage, may I suggest a few relevant sentences be added to the excellent book. Regards, Tim. Well, he's got a good point there. I could have made it clearer, I guess. So I said, Tim, is your wife actively employed at the present time? If so, you are just fine. If not, we should take a much closer look at your options. Assuming she continues to work, you may stay on her plan as a dependent for as long as you wish. If you eventually decide to, you may leave her plan, enroll in Part B, and purchase a Medicare supplement without having to answer any medical questions, as long as you do it in a timely manner. I hope that helps. Thanks for the suggestion to improve the clarity of the book. I am working on the 2021 version now, and it's a balancing act between keeping it a light how-to book and a multi-volume encyclopedia. Then I said, let me know if anything else comes up. And he did let me know if anything else came up. He said, she works at a largish law firm. And they gave me the name of the law firm. I'm not going to give them the name, put the name out there, because who knows if they like hearing their name over the podcast airwaves or not. But she works at this law firm, and the HR person there wrote me about the form she or her descendants will fill out for me. The form is mentioned in your book. I believe she assured me that all is gut. And he spoke a little German lingo there. And my wife is 9 years my junior and intends to keep working, but she thinks it is wasteful to spend $4,000 or more per year on healthcare just because I like the mail. It also has to do with completing a treatment program. Oh, I just remembered another little question nag with the book. What about vision, hearing, dental? If one does not choose an advantage option, and your arguments are well made, are there other means to have these covered? As a private pilot, I'm concerned about vision in particular, as is the FAA. So he said, thanks, Tim. And I responded to that question, series of questions. Dental and vision hearing are never included with Medicare Parts A or B and are only included with some Medicare Advantage plans as a marketing element. Often the coverages and or networks of providers are limited and disappointing. There are many insurance companies that sell this type of coverage on a standalone basis, and I have attached a brochure of one such plan. This type of protection is priced attractively for employees when provided through an employer program, but is much more expensive when purchased individually. Therefore, I recommend that departing members ask their HR types whether the group coverage can be taken with them before taking any action on their own. I wish I had an answer for your disagreement about the cost versus benefit of having you remain on the law firm's plan. And was there any more? I think there is one more little exchange between Tim and I. I know those crickets have probably croaked or cricketed already, but Randy's looking at me going, yeah, come on, let's go. Let's move it. So one last exchange with Tim. Thank you for the brochure. I will have a look. Your book did relate that vision, hearing, and dental are not part of Medicare and that the relevant coverages offered in some Advantage plans are not attractive. At this point, I think it's worth a few grand to wait a year. I have three in-laws who are doctors, and they are very pro-Mayo. I used to be more so 10 years ago when my knee replacement happened. They were great. Last year, I had rotator cuff surgery, too much sparring. He says a couple of words I don't recognize, kumite, K-U-M-I-T-E / sparring. in his life. It sounds like he had to defend himself a lot. He said, I was much less impressed. The medical staff at Mayo seemed as good. Who am I to judge? But Mayo is much less patient friendly. Thanks for your help and your book. And I said, good luck, Tim. Let me know if I need anything else. So that is my exchange with Tim. I'm hoping to hear from him again this coming fall when he has to make the decision again about staying on his young wife's medical plan for $4,000 a year, or maybe turning his back on the Mayo Clinic and going elsewhere to be treated because the doctors at Mayo Clinic do not take Medicare patients. So that is, I think, all the time we have for the mailbag today. What do you think, Randy? Was that sufficient to keep him quiet at the chip for a while?
I think I'm good. Yeah. So that's your Mayo Clinic story.
And I have no choice but to stick to it. I have called them before and said, and I did it on Mary's behalf too. Got a medical problem, got a Mayo ID number. Which of your many fine doctors might we contact to deal with this medical problem? And the answer comes back, none, zero. Don't bother contacting them. Yeah. Bupkis. And yes,
zero.
Please, yeah, go away. Squat. Please make room for the next person in line behind you, because we ain't talking to you. Yeah.
That's interesting. I never knew that Mayo didn't.
Yeah, it's America. They have the right not to take patients that they don't want to. The only people that are forced by law to take customers are bakeries that don't want to take gay wedding cake orders, I guess, you know, but they.
Well, that's really, that's down at the basic bottom belief structure of America. Now, getting medical care, no. Wedding cakes,
that's right. So we don't really have a lot of options there if the Mayo Clinic isn't going to take Medicare patients. I bet if you went there and you were bleeding out your throat or something, they would treat you. And they probably do a good job because theoretically they've got the best medical reputation around. But and I don't know if the Mayo Clinic in other locations, I think they've got one in Florida. And of course their Mac Daddy of Mayo Clinics would be in Minnesota. But I don't know if all of those Mayo Clinic facilities refuse to take Medicare patients that need routine treatment or not.
Well, I have heard from some pretty educated sources that the level of customer, well, I won't say the level of patient care has gone down, but it's become more and more less patient friendly.
I have heard that from a couple of sources, including Tim, who's back and forth correspondence with me. I just finished with. He said they've become less patient friendly over the last 10 years. He had treatment 10 years ago. He had treatment recently. He was not as pleased with him or is not as impressed with him. I also heard from a woman that happens to live in your house. You may know her, Margaret. She said the same thing to me. I said, well, and she's much younger than you are. And I said, you know, if you get this medical plan, you'll be able to go to the Mayo Clinic. And she said, I wouldn't go near that place with a 10-foot pole. I don't know what she was going to do with that pole, but she said that she was not impressed with the Mayo Clinic, especially because their emergency room looked like a third world hellhole or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting story because everybody's notion about Mayo Clinic is it's like, you know, the top of the heap, doesn't get any better than that. But what I've heard from various sources is that the doctors are, you know, about the age of Doogie Howser. And so you don't really get to anybody that's, you know, kind of got some experience until you're well up the line. And most people, you know, like me, who's, you know, working off Medicare, and I haven't been there since I went on Medicare, but I would never get to see any of those people because I would be shuffled off with my bleeding head in the ambulance to the nearest hospital that does.
Yes, they would eject you and you would be on the road headed somewhere else where they would actually deign to treat you. Well, I had to go over there.
What's my patient number? your patient number is zero.
I actually have a Mayo Clinic patient number because I needed blood tests a couple of times with the results sent back to Illinois. So it's kind of interesting. I didn't want to stay in Illinois because it was wintertime. So I came out here. I called the Mayo Clinic. Can I come over and have a blood test? Absolutely. We'll assign you a patient number. Come on over when you, you know, at a certain time and we'll draw your blood. We'll do the test. We'll send the results to your doctor. And I did that two or three times. But then when I needed more treatment than that, I can't remember what happened. Called him up. Okay, I'm your patient. You know, I want to come over and get treated. I don't think so. It was kind of like, you know, it's okay to take blood. We can break even on that, but we're going to lose money on you if you come over here with any more serious problems. So just go somewhere else, will you please?
And I totally get
it. But we're fortunate to have a lot of good options in Arizona, though.
Yeah, we've got a lot of great options in Arizona, so I'm surprised at some level, as competitive as the medical industry has become over the last 10, 20 years, that they can afford to just sit out on the Medicare business.
Yep, apparently so, because there's a lot of us out there, but they're just not dipping into that market. So I could tell that you were just about to bring this to a close, and it's probably...
We need to bring it to the close because... We're coming into our second hour.
Oh, God, jeez. No wonder everybody's volume knobs have been clicking off. I apologize. No. If any of you have hung on this long hoping to hear something worthwhile, I am so sorry.
No, I'm just teasing because, you know, today is April Fool's Day.
It has, and you caught me. You caught me.
I did. I was going to catch you this morning when I couldn't hear you stalking.
It turned out you were telling the truth.
I was telling the truth. So anyway, thank you everyone for joining us. We always appreciate you spending the time with us because without you, it'd be a lot less fun. A lot less fun.
And but in the meantime, a lot more Guinness involved.
Yes, yes. You know, we are, for those of you who enjoyed our, you know, Carson Pub Guinness session, we're going to schedule one of those again. I'm trying to talk Doug into like once a month. He wants to go once a week, but I don't know.
Well, Guinness is pretty tasty stuff, so I'm hoping to maximize my consumption. But anyway, yes, thank you so much. Go buy the book if you're of a mind to, Medicare for the Lazy Man, simplest and easiest guide ever. It's on sale at Amazon. It's on sale at Barnes & Noble, too, but nobody's bought it lately. So I went to a different computer and went there hoping to fool it and find out the mistake, but it's just Barnes & Noble does not promote it like Amazon does, so they're not really active. If you want to go to Barnes & Noble, it's roughly the same price, so and you know that's your choice. But anyway, thank you very much for listening to our podcast today. Thank you, Randy, for making it sound so good.
You are absolutely welcome. Folks, again, you have just spent about 32, maybe 33 and a half minutes listening to Doug Jones, the anti-insurance insurance guy from Oklahoma and the only six-year-old I know of that got a pad of Medicare apps as a child for Christmas.
And filled them all out.
That's right.
So bye-bye, everyone.